My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
The Junks are brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Time now to head out to the BetQL guest hotline. Say good morning to Dave Richard from CBSSports.com. You can find Dave and the CBS Fantasy crew on their YouTube channel, Fantasy Football Today. New episodes stream live almost every morning, even in the dead of the off season. You can search for FFT CBS on YouTube to find them, like, and subscribe. Today, it's absolutely free. Hello, Dave. Good morning.
I thought I punched him. I put him on. Oh, you know what? I messed up. There he is. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
Dave, what is up, my friend? Good to hear from you.
Big Dave.
Good to hear. Are you guys ready for your drafts this weekend?
I think I'm ready. I had two last night. Dave, this may tilt you because I know that you're not as high on this guy as I clearly am. I think I have a Devin Achane problem. I drafted him twice in the second round both times last night. I just can't get away from the guy and his explosiveness. I know that he's competing with Raheem Mostert. Also, the Dolphins drafted Jalen Wright. There's some competition there, and he's not the most durable guy, but he's super explosive, and I just couldn't get away.
So he's one of those guys where if he hits and he plays at a high level every single week,
yeah.
You it's almost like you stole him from the rest of your league because he's got top five type potential. We saw so many games from him last year when he put up huge numbers, but a lot of those games were blowouts.
Yeah.
So some of them were, like, remember that game where the Dolphins won, like, by 50 points over the Broncos?
Yeah.
And then there's the game they won big over the Commanders. He had a lot of work after the game was in hand in both of those games. This is more for the listeners than it is for you, Cakes, but I've been to Dolphins practice four times this summer, and all four times Raheem Mostert was the first running back up. All four times Raheem Mostert was working with the 2-minute offense. All four times Raheem Mostert was basically the number 1A, and Achane was the 1B. I even saw Achane returning a kickoff at one point. And at no point did I see Devon Achane make, like, he made handfuls of amazing plays, but it wasn't like every single play, oh my gosh, this guy's unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see Jalen Wright flash. And I know that Mike McDaniel likes to use multiple running backs every week, rain or shine. Okay, he doesn't have a Christian McCaffrey. So until that really changes, I can't buy into Achane as a second-round pick.
So, Dave, last week we talked a little bit about CeeDee Lamb, his contract situation is resolved. I see you have him, I don't know if this is updated, but you have him seventh as the second wide receiver after Tyreek Hill.
I do not. He is my top wide receiver.
Oh, he's number one now
on the site.
Okay, so it's good that we brought him up. And where does Ayuk fall now?
He's fallen into round four, and there is a lot of uncertainty about what we do with Brandon Ayuk moving forward. Now you're making me double check my rankings because of Lamb. Look, Ayuk, we don't know if he's even going to play week one. Mm. The fact that the report saying that he's been medically cleared, that's That sounds like the Niners trying to force the issue and say, hey, bud, you can play for us now. You need to come back. You are, you know, under contract, theoretically. We'll see where this goes. But I can't be as confident in him being a week-in, week-out, must-start fantasy receiver as I would be with somebody like Jamar Chase or certainly Lamb, especially now that Lamb signed. We can count on that now. There's just some uncertainty there. And then anytime there's uncertainty, combined with the fact that a player needs to practice before the season starts, Brandon Ayuk is not going to be able to go all of August and then show up week one against the Jets and be like, all right, I'm ready let's go.
Right.
And then be himself. Right. He can't do that. Josh Jacobs tried to do that last year, and it's a different position. But Jacobs was miserable. And so I think that there's some significant risk right now with Brandon Ayuk. The best way to fix that is for him to get back at practice ASAP, and then he can be a reliable fantasy option. So you can look at this one of two ways. If you're getting him in round four, yes, it's a risk, but there's a dip that you're buying. It's like when a stock falls, and then you buy the stock and it goes back up. That's a possibility, too, because we don't know. Any day now, he could sign. Everything's good in San Francisco, and he's back to being one of the top targets for Brock Purdy.
Sticking with receivers, I got Garrett in a Superflex league. I had Hurts, and I took Dak. So those are my two quarterbacks in Superflex. But Garrett Wilson was my top receiver that I drafted, Dave. And I got to think, you know, he had 95 catches last year. He didn't have a ton of touchdowns, but that's because of who was throwing to him. Where are you projecting Wilson's numbers? I mean, 95 catches is a lot of catches with a bum quarterback situation. And if Rodgers can stay healthy, what are you projecting Garrett Wilson's numbers for catches and yards and touchdowns with Rodgers?
Well, let's start with this, and your imagination will run wild, Bish, but 10 targets a game. So 10 times a game, Aaron Rodgers theoretically will throw to him. And I think he's got a good chance to catch a majority of those because, from all accounts, Rodgers still has it as far as throwing the football. And the Jets did a really diligent job this offseason improving their offensive line. They really want to protect Aaron Rodgers and get him for more than four snaps. And so if he's catching eight passes a game, and there will be some games where he's even in 10, 11 catch territory, then the numbers will just improve, and his efficiency should improve because he's getting throws that are just much better than what he got from Zach Wilson last year and whoever else was. Trevor Siemian was throwing to him at some point. And then here's the best part. Even the backup quarterback in New York, it's Tyrod Taylor. Listen, man, Tyrod Taylor's not the end-all, be-all of quarterbacks, but he's competent. And he'll have the common sense to keep throwing at Garrett Wilson, too. So even if something happens to Aaron Rodgers, I think that there's still good production, certainly better than what we saw last year, from Garrett Wilson, who didn't even average 15 points per game despite those 95 catches. That's really hard to believe. I imagine that we're going to see a career year for Garrett Wilson. I think he's worth that first-round pick.
Wow.
Dave, what do you think about two under-the-radar running backs who could have and should have big roles, at least early in this 2024 season? Chuba Hubbard in Carolina and Jerome Ford in Cleveland.
So we've been talking about Chuba since May on our podcast. So he might be a new name to some people who are listening to the show, but we've been talking about him on our podcast since May because we knew that Jonathan Brooks wasn't going to be ready to go to start the season. And now that he's on the NFI list for the first four games, and they're talking about ramping him up once he comes off that list, it's almost like this is a semi-redshirt year for Jonathan Brooks. And he might make some contributions in the back half of the season, but the first half of the season, it's going to be Chuba Hubbard leading the way for Carolina. And I know the Panthers' offense, it was miserable last year. Bad offensive line, bad scheme. Guess what? Chuba Hubbard started 12 games. He averaged over 12 PPR points per game. He was on a 1,300-yard pace last year when he was the starter for Carolina. Now the offensive line's better. Now the play caller is improved. It's Dave Canales, and he is a one running back type of guy. I suspect that we're going to see a lot of Chuba Hubbard playing three downs in the early portion of the year, and Miles Sanders just kind of spelling him from time to time. I hope I'm right on that, but that's what I think is going to happen. And that makes Chuba Hubbard just an unbelievable bargain. His average draft position is like round 10. I think he's a round 8 pick, and he's especially worth taking if you only take one running back, or maybe even zero running backs, with your first four, five, or six picks in your draft. You can get Chuba Hubbard in that round 8 range, and bang, you've got a starter right for the beginning of the season and someone that can help carry you through at least four games, if not six or seven games. As for Jerome Ford, it's the exact same thing. I actually like Hubbard better than Ford. because I think the Browns are going to throw a little bit more than they have in the past. And Ford was okay last year, but I think he's going to share. And I think the Browns, based on what they've done this offseason, that's a tell that they want to throw the ball more than they did last year and try and maximize what Deshaun Watson can do. Hopefully his shoulder cooperates. But Ford is somebody that I'm taking after Chuba Hubbard, but they're both in that round 8 and round 9 range.
Talking to Dave Richard, fantasy football expert for CBSSports.com. So last week, Dave, we also talked to you a little bit about what you saw on the practice field from Jaden Daniels during that inner squad with the Miami Dolphins. They add Noah Brown yesterday. I'm wondering, do you like any of the receivers they have not named Terry McLaurin?
I do, but it's not a wide receiver.
Oh, I know who you like. I know who you're going to name.
It's Eck.
Yep.
It is Zach Ertz.
Yeah,
he's you like Zach?
He's in your sleeper column. I saw
he
that.
Is right. Yep. So you know this, and I try and come up with one name every summer that this is my sleeper of the year. This is the guy that you draft with a late pick, mm-hmm. and he's going to outperform that production or that value, I should say. Last year was Jalen Warren. This year it's Josh Palmer of the Chargers. I think that wide receiver has a chance to have a monster season as the number one guy in L.A. It was almost Ertz because I just don't buy into Brown, either Noah or Deami or Luke McCaffrey, being a consistent number two target for Jaden Daniels. And from all accounts at practice, and Ertz didn't practice when I was there, but from all accounts and all the other Commanders' practices, he and Daniels have been on the same page all summer long, and Ertz is not explosive, and that's kind of part of the problem. But he is a good route runner. He's got really good hands, clearly good experience. No team is going to double team him. And with the speed that they have on that offense, I think Ertz is going to see a lot of short throws on a consistent basis from Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. And that makes me moderately excited to draft him with a late round pick. I prefer to take him if I just totally whiff on tight end in my draft. Say the first 10 tight ends go off the board, I just don't get the chance to take any of them. That's when I start looking Ertz's way, and I might take him with TJ Hockenson, who's also not going to play the first four games of the season, but right. when he comes back, he could end up being pretty good for Minnesota. But for the time being, Zach Ertz can be somebody that maybe can get me 10 to 15 PPR points per week, depending on whether or not he scores a touchdown.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about tight ends. And what's going on with Brock Bowers? They're being very quiet about his foot injury. They're saying it's unspecified, but he hasn't played since the first preseason game. He hasn't been practicing. They didn't put him on PUP, but I'm just wondering how serious it is. I guess he's not going to play in week one, but is he still worthy draft pick at tight end?
It's something that you do have to monitor, but the idea of drafting Brock Bowers isn't just to use him right away in week one. It's to have somebody of that caliber of talent on your team and hope that he breaks out as a rookie. I'm a huge fan of his talent, just as everybody is who watched him play at Georgia. The versatility that the Raiders have seemed to recognize that he brings to the field is a huge plus that makes him a little bit different than your typical tight end. And if they're just being smart about it, Bish, and they're just saying, well, we're just going to, you know, keep him in bubble wrap and not really put him out there. He knows what he's supposed to do. I know that he impressed them from the early stages of training camp. Mm-hmm. And I think he's got a shot to be their number two target getter behind Davante Adams this year, especially when you think about Gardner Minshew and how last year especially, man, he kept his throws short in Indianapolis. And this is going to be a good short area target for him. And unlike Zach Ertz, I think we can see Brock Bowers make some serious plays after the catch. And I think Bowers is going to be involved. I think he's going to have his own package at the goal line this year for Las Vegas. So he's a candidate if he's healthy, if his foot's okay. We're talking maybe 8 touchdowns as a rookie. It could be that high. And you're drafting him. I mean, I'll look and see where I've got him right now in my rankings. I'm very bullish on him.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to take him somewhere around pick 90. But you might be able to get him 10, 15 picks later than that, and that would be round 9 into round 10. Let that injury tag scare other people off, but not you, even if you have to use a different tight end, like maybe Zach Ertz in week number 1.
Yeah, I took him. I did draft Bowers, and I drafted Hockenson, but Hockenson's going to be out for a month, but I can't stash him. So I got to either drop Hockenson and pick up Ertz or, you know, just kind of keep him and hopefully Bowers doesn't get hurt.
And then the move that you do there is just identify the tight end that you want, whether it's Ertz or somebody else, And then the day before week one starts, drop Hockenson so that way you've got a chance to pick him up on waivers
right
after week one.
Dave, we got to run, but next week it's the real thing. We'll take listener calls for lineup advice. It's finally here. We're a week away.
I love it, guys. Don't forget to draft Josh Palmer in round 9 in your leagues this weekend.
That's right. Your guy.
Done.
There you go.
Dave, thanks as always, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
You got it, guys.
Yep, that's Dave Richard, fantasy football expert for CBSSports.com.
It's kind of amazing how he's so dialed into fantasy that he just like knows, okay, the round 9, appropriate.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
He knows where every guy goes, where they should be picked, when they're being overpicked or underpicked. Like
it's
his business.
It's actually crazy.
Yeah, he knows.
Yeah.
He knows those things, as he should. Coming up at 8:40, we'll be joined on the show by Armin Gitayan, longtime author. He's now the co-author of a new book, The Prize, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. That's coming up at 8:40.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Big deal or little deal in just a minute or two, but some breaking NFL news during the commercial break. Patriots coach Gerard Mayo informed players in a team meeting that Jacoby Brissett is the starting quarterback, while Drake May will be his backup. Brissett told, this is from Ian Rappaport, Brissett told NFL Network in August, quote, "I'm the perfect person to mentor the guys, but I'm also the perfect person to start." So former Commanders quarterback Jacoby Brissett getting his chance to lead Patriots as they take on the Bengals in week one.
Even though May looked really good in the preseason, no surprise they're going to go with the veteran who's started a bunch of games.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing at Cincinnati. Week one. Tough out.
That's a tough one.
Doesn't have a ton of options to throw to. I mean, KJ Osborne, Tyquan Thornton, Demario Douglas, a couple of rookies they drafted.
Jalen Polk.
Polk, yeah.
The only thing that's curious is that Mayo was quoted as saying that May had outplayed Jacoby.
Yeah.
He went on WEEI, the Greg Hill show, on Monday, and he said, quote, "What I will say is that this is a true competition. It wasn't fluff or anything like that. It's true competition. And I would say at this current point, Drake has outplayed Jacoby."
Mm. So even
so,
though
he chose the guy that didn't win the competition.
I guess. And I guess the answer is just he just wants to make sure he's fully has a grasp of
fully
everything.
Prepared.
He qualified it and said we have to take in the full body work going back to the spring and beginning of training camp and we'll see where we end up. So maybe he's saying, okay, the last couple of weeks Drake May's been better, but over the course of months, I bet
Brissett was better at the beginning.
Right. It's got a little more experience.
No kidding. Whatever.
I give it a month. Max 4 weeks.
A month.
A max.
I don't think he'll embarrass himself.
No, but
he'll be fine.
They're gonna lose because the Patriots stink. Yeah. So when they're 1-3, they're gonna be like, all right, time to go with the new toy.
Probably.
And look, he doesn't want to damage the kid early, especially against a tough opener. He knows it's gonna be a long slog of a rookie season for him, because the Patriots are under-talented.
Here's the deal.
Brissett.
They're gonna,
makes sense.
They open up with Cincy. Then they come back home and play Seattle. All right? So I would assume Brissett's still the starter. Then they got to play the Jets and the Niners on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So three of the first four are on the road against good defenses.
Yeah.
So let's just avoid those?
I don't know. I don't know if you avoid them, but that's just a tough stretch. Maybe you want to have a veteran out there. And then they come back and play the Dolphins, Texans, Jags, Jets all at home. So maybe they wait until that home stretch.
So you're not you're a Drake May guy. Does this discourage you? No.
No, because I assume this is going to happen all along. I thought from the start, I thought Brissett would be the guy, but Brissett ain't going to last very long.
Mm-hmm. Drake May's starting behind the other guys because he's got a couple years less of college experience.
Uh-huh.
I think the thought is that he's going to be better long term. Right. Jason Adams is the number one quarterback. I had him number two behind Caleb.
I think he's going to be good.
I think Caleb is going to be fantastic.
He looks like a mini Mahomes, at least in the preseason, the clips that I've seen.
I think Caleb's going to be a roller coaster. That's my guess.
He's got a pretty good cast around him. We'll have to see how it plays out.
Yeah,
we're
going to
find out in about a week.
That's true. He definitely does have a good cast.
All right, time now for Big Deal or Little Deal. It's the newest segment that's sweeping radio. It's wildly popular.
Big or little.
The Oklahoma Sooners are going to honor Toby Keith with a quarter break sing-along. On Monday, August 26th, the University of Oklahoma unveiled its fan experience enhancements for the 2024 football season. The Toby Keith tribute third to fourth quarter break will celebrate the Oklahoma icon, giving 85,000 fans the opportunity to sing along with the legendary Sooner superfan.
Big deal or little? I mean, it's hard for me to...
I guess for Oklahoma fans, it's a big deal.
I think it's hard for me to disrespect the guy who's like an icon.
I think it's a pretty big deal for 85,000 people every home game to belt out one of your tunes. Pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't announced what song it's going to be. There's probably a couple songs that it won't be.
Okay.
Including his smash hit, Should Have Been a Cowboy.
Yeah.
Because... that's Oklahoma State.
They're not going to do that. Yeah.
They're not going to do As Good As I Once Was, because that opens up to joning if your team sucks.
I mean, I think you mentioned this on Twitter, Drab. I think the no-brainer is Red Solo Cup.
Red Solo Cup. It's a smash, but then you got students singing about drinking, and I don't know.
But let me...
How Do You Like Me Now? Is this song so awesome?
You don't
not
even like
fan.
Music.
Play Red Solo Cup because that's such an easy sing along. I don't know that I'm feeling this song either, personally.
A little deal for me, but
I mean, this has got to be the winner. I know it's celebrating drinking and you're on a college campus,
Solo
but
Cup is the best receptor. It's a lot of fun.
How could this not be the song?
You know what? I'm all for more college football traditions.
Who is it?
Well, the new hot thing is every school has to have their song that they sing at a quarter break. Michigan does Bright Side.
Right.
Oregon does Shout. Jump Around, Wisconsin.
Right. Yep. I don't think the Terps have one. I fill you up. They come out to
Let's
Thunderstruck.
Have a party.
This has got to be the one.
Yeah.
The problem with the Terps, and we had like Loxley on yesterday, the attendance isn't consistent enough
He's trying to
even
build
have a tradition.
Yeah.
It'd be quiet.
Hopefully it keeps building.
You see about 100 Red Solo Cups at a Terps game.
Yeah. All right. So we're kind of split on whether that's a big deal or a little deal.
He used to have the biggest tailgate in town, and he just quit.
Get back there.
Headline for a big movie coming out within the next, I want to say, 2 or 3 weeks. Beetlejuice review. Tim Burton's sequel surpasses the original in almost every respect, even though I know Eric Bickle hasn't seen Beetlejuice.
I don't think I saw it either.
I know there's Howard Stern Beetlejuice.
Yeah, you know that Beetle.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Definitely a different Beetlejuice.
That's the only thing I know, Cakes.
Do you know who played Beetlejuice?
No.
You don't know?
I do know Michael Keaton.
Played Beetlejuice?
But I didn't see it.
I don't even really know. What
year
what
did that come out?
What is a Beetlejuice?
He's like,
like, I don't even know.
You know, I'm not even going to bother explaining it to you.
You would just roll your eyes
and you'd fall asleep.
Well, I would like to hear you try to explain it then. That means you don't know how to explain it.
No, I can explain what he is. Yeah. He is a,
ghost?
He's like a demon that kind of lives in limbo. But you can summon him by saying his name out loud 3 times.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice?
Then Michael Correct. Keaton would pop up, okay, with like his crazy hair.
Why are you
and
laughing,
his suit.
It's just how laughing at Cake trying to explain this to you, that you have no reference of Beetlejuice.
Yeah, he's not following along. Basically, a dead couple summons Beetlejuice to try to get the people who moved into their house before they died in a tragic car wreck to vacate their house.
So all right, they technically a ghost.
He's like a ghost. They bring him back to try to scare the people out of the house they can have their house back.
Can I ask a question and you guys will mock me?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Get ready to mock me. Why is he playing this song?
Because this song is featured in the movie in an iconic scene.
Okay.
Very iconic.
Sing along.
Yeah.
All right. I like the song.
This is where he possesses everyone at the dinner table.
I know the song.
This would be a better choice for the sing along at the college football game.
This is a great song. Harry Belafonte?
Yes.
This is Smashola.
That's a good
Beetlejuice sounds
Harry
Belafonte?
Yeah, yeah. Because he just passed like in the last few months.
Yeah, I think he lived to like 9. He was about 90 or 89
or 90.
And
he was like, but handsome too.
Oh, he was dreamy.
Like even when he was an old fart.
He had a great run.
Yeah.
Michael Keaton's best movie.
It's not
Beetlejuice.
Hold on. Let me think. He's got an amazing catalog.
Come on, it's Mr. Mom. Best movie.
Nobody would say Mr. Mom is his best movie. I mean, some people might say Batman.
I'm kind of kidding.
Oh, you're kind of kidding.
But Mr. Mom is great.
I believe it's Michael Keaton. Pacific Heights?
Yes, he's in that.
Yeah, I played a bad guy. Played a good villain in that. Big deal or little deal, Morgantown schools are closing ahead of Pat McAfee show's arrival on Friday.
Oh, is that where game day is?
Kids in Morgantown, West Virginia are getting a day off Friday thanks to Pat McAfee's show heading into town.
Oh, Pat McAfee.
He's bringing it to Morgantown to preview Saturday's Penn State-West Virginia game. And because of anticipated traffic, Morgantown schools closed on Friday.
Wow.
It's basically a national holiday because Pat McAfee's coming back.
Yeah. But that's not where game day is this weekend. I think game day is at College Station.
That's right.
Cakes, is that a little deal or big deal in your eyes?
Well, I think if you're a kid going to a Morgantown high school,
if you lived
school,
in Morgantown, it's a big deal.
You get a 3-day weekend.
To you and me, it's not a big deal.
You get to party more in advance of
4-day
Nittany
weekend.
Lions and Mountaineers.
4-day weekend.
4-day weekend, because it's Labor Day. Big deal. 4-day weekends. Big deals.
Big deal.
All the way around.
Right.
So that's a big deal. Final story in big deal or little deal. Caitlin Clark makes WNBA rookie history again in the Indiana Fever win over the Connecticut Sun. She set a record for the most 3-pointers made by a rookie in a season during the win over the Connecticut Sun. Big deal.
Say
or
big
little deal.
She's number one. That team is starting to roll a little bit.
They are.
I think they're still one game under 500.
Yeah.
But that was the worst team in the WNBA a year ago. They didn't get off to a great start. I'm trying to see what they've done in their last 10 games.
Oh, I bet you it's pretty good. I think they've got let's see. They're 15-16. So they're the 7th seed right now.
Did you see that?
Mystics are 9-22.
She got punked again. Like they just totally took a cheap shot on her.
They just can't stop. She's a
bitching her around.
She's incredible for her composure.
Yeah,
to take all that crap.
I would 7-3 in their last 10 games.
Yep.
Only two teams have been better than that, and they're atop the league. So, pretty impressive. And Angel Reese keeps getting like 20 rebound games.
Well, it's because she misses 100 layups all the time and just gets her own rebounds. I mean, it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple math. All right, when we come back, we'll be joined by author Armin Katayan. He's the co-author of a new book, The Prize, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. He'll join us next here on The Fan. Time to head to the BetQL guest hotline. Say good morning to Armin Katayan. He's the co-author of a new book, The Prize, What It Takes to Win in College Football. Actually, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. His co-author is John Talty. Armin, good morning. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Good, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. We always have to tell you, Raw Recruits, best sports book ever. Just so you know, always have to remind you.
Damn good.
That seems like seven generations ago to me. But that was Alex Wolf. Thank God, both of us.
Hey, you talk a lot about Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher in this book. And one of the biggest surprises of last year was when Saban announced his retirement, and now he's on game day with McAfee and all those boys and Herb Street. I thought he was very good last week. I don't know if you saw it, but I thought he was pretty good.
He was very good.
Yeah.
He's not going to be anything but great. You know, Nick.
Yeah. I agree.
Second best is not in his vocabulary.
But what was the clincher, Nick Saban?
Oh, yeah.
What was the clincher on Nick Saban deciding on, you know what, to call it quits? And obviously, the college football game has changed so much with NIL and realignment. But what was the clincher for him?
I think it was building all season long. And, you know, Nick has his finger on the pulse of the team, probably as good as anybody. And he's incredibly involved in every aspect of what he calls the organization. But I think, like a lot of coaches, after they lost to Michigan in the Rose Bowl, in the college football playoffs, and, you know, Nick has this $18 million estate down in Jupiter, Florida, and he went down there and, you know, he's kind of staring out at the Atlantic Ocean and trying to figure out, you know, what the next steps are. But when he came back, he's sitting in his office and, you know, one player after another is waiting outside and they're not outside to talk about, you know, what the off season program is going to be or how can they get better to play or start in the following season. It's all about the money. It's about, coach, if I don't get paid more in NIL money, I'm going in the portal. And, you know, that just doesn't sit well with Nick, whose whole ethos is control. And the lack of control, the loss of control over a program, and really control that he's had in one form or another for 50 years as a head coach, it was just too much for him. And I know I've, you know, gotten close to Terry and Nick over the years, dating back to the time when he was the head coach in Miami and with the Dolphins. And, you know, I communicate with Terry via text and occasionally on the phone. And I know from the text that we exchange that, you know, these new rules are murder. You know, what are we doing here? And so I think that was the clincher. I think he was, but, you know, I'll tell you another side story that we have in the book, and it involves Julian Sain.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about him. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, think about, you know, you talk about chaos. I saw Julian play out in Carlsbad. He was the number one quarterback recruit in the country in the class of 2024. And he's an ethereal talent. I mean, generational talent. The only reason he went to Alabama, he never took another official visit. And he recruited for Bama to bring in receivers and other playmakers. Was lock, stock, and barrel committed to Nick and wanting to be developed and be the next great quarterback in the line there. And he literally has a 3 o'clock class on the Wednesday, his first class, official class of the new semester. At 4 o'clock, he goes into the team meeting, and at 4:05, Nick has resigned.
Wow.
And yeah, imagine that.
A bombshell.
That's unbelievable.
A bombshell. And then, and we report this in the book, and this is confirmed both from Karen Brandenburg, Julian's mom, and in a text exchange I had with Julian, he waits outside Kalen DeBoer's office for 90 minutes, finally gets in there and sees the new head coach. They have a very short conversation about, oh, you're going to love the offense, blah, blah, blah. And then DeBoer, I swear, asks him how to spell his last name.
Wow.
How do you spell your last name again? Uh-huh. Now, this is the number one quarterback in the country. Look, I understand DeBoer's got a lot of things going on, you know, at that period of time. But, you know, Julian's now at Ohio State.
Right.
And he's being mentored and tutored by Chip Kelly. So, and I think, you know, dollars to donuts, he'll start at Ohio State next year. So, but that just kind of gives you a sense of just the kind of the unhinged chaos that's going on in the game right now.
You probably don't know the dollar amount, but can you guess on what sort of an NIL deal Saiyan did sign with Ohio State?
I know
for
a fact that it was – well, let me put it in perspective.
Right.
For someone of Julian's talent, he was recruited by Penn State, LSU, Notre Dame, Texas. Every Power 5 power team wanted him. The going market for someone of his talent – over 4 years was $8 million,
oh,
$2 million a year.
Unreal. Yeah.
And I know he took a drastic, drastic discount to go to Alabama. And I'm talking maybe 10% of the $2 million in order to sign with Bama. Because all he wanted to do was be developed by Nick. And they really began to have this very close coach-quarterback relationship. And you know, I think heartbroken would be a word to describe how Julian felt. But to his credit, you know, he waited. He saw what was happening. He wasn't crazy about the line we have in the book is the loss of structure around the program, certainly early on. And, you know, when DeBoer brought in another quarterback from Washington, Austin Mack, who had 4 years of eligibility, not that Julian really cared about, because he doesn't care about competing against anybody, he just didn't like the writing on the wall, and I think, you know, it took about 10 minutes before Ohio State, and I know USC was after him before he signed with Ohio State, and I think he's in a really good place right now.
Talking to Armin Katan, the new book is The Prize, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos, and you set up the book with the scene of Nick Saban.
It's not The Prize, is it?
It's The Price.
It's The Price.
Sorry.
It's you The
set
Price.
Up,
you set up
it's
the book.
DC accent. Yeah, I didn't know you guys had an accent there. But
you set up the book with the scene of Saban and Harbaugh and Harbaugh kind of not believing that Saban went there. But there's also something which jumped out at me that you have somebody who says that 80% of the coaches and everybody around college football, the ADs, are miserable. Can you talk about those two things?
Sure. I mean, there's a reason the book is called The Price, and it's not just about the financial implications here, the billions of dollars that are pouring into college football more so than ever, and the grant of rights money, and how that affected realignment, and just the kind of wanton greed at this point in time. But it's more so, I think, as John and I discovered, it's the physical toll, it's the emotional toll, it's the psychological toll that's being taken on these coaches. That this is now a 365-day-a-year job. Before, you could get 4 or 5 weeks off, you could catch some time with your family. You know, there's a lot of you know, the person I talked to who gave us that quote, he's in communications daily with college presidents and athletic directors and compliance people, and they're just physically exhausted from this whole thing. And because you're getting bombarded in a different direction almost every day, when you combine NIL, and I think the portal is really the one that is just the wild card here in so many ways, but then you add in the pressures of realignment, and, you know, are we going to be in this conference next year? You know, witnessing the destruction of the Pac-12 in a matter of 48 hours over nothing more than self-interest and wanton greed. So I think that's what The Price is really all about. And I think it takes you, it takes you behind the scenes, you know, as these presidents and athletic directors and coaches and assistant coaches are just grappling with this brave new world. And I mean, Jed Fish, for example, there's a couple of really good chapters that I wrote about raising Arizona, how he took a team that had lost 12 straight games and got beat by Arizona State 70-7 in the final game before Jed took over. You talk about raising a team, and they beat Oklahoma in the Alamo Bowl last year. you know, to win 10 games in three seasons. They went from zero wins to one win the first year, five the second, to 10 in the third. But Jed didn't see his wife, Amber, basically for the first year he was at Arizona. And finally, he said, I just had to reset. So when did he see her? He saw her from 5:30 in the morning to 6:30 in the morning every day before he would go to the office for an hour so he could catch up with his wife and his daughters. And so, look, I'm not playing the violin here because of terms of what they're, you know, Jed's now making $8 million a year at Washington, and Nick was making, you know, more than 11 in Alabama, and there's coaches are getting rich right and left, but they're paying a price for it. And, you know, the question is, how much longer can this go on? Can this system that we now have survive the way it is? And I don't think so. I think there has to be some pretty dramatic changes and frameworks put into place before things just completely implode.
The book is The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos by Armen Gitayen. And one of the chapters, or maybe more than one, is inside the feud between Nick Saban and his longtime lieutenant at LSU, Jimbo Fisher. Can you give us one tasty nugget of the feud before we read the book?
They're just two alpha dogs, mm-hmm. you know, and this is John Talty's reporting, and John's a terrific, I don't know how much you know about him, but he's covered the SEC for 10 years. He's about half my age. He reminds me kind of young me. He's pretty relentless and obsessive in his reporting. And I mean, basically they're just two dogs, alpha dogs. And they kind of are the world-class four letter word guys, you know, and in terms of how they can manipulate the English language in a way that very few can, with the F words and a few other things around in there. So, I mean, it's more to me about what happened at A&M. It's not so much, I mean, Nick and Jimbo were, they're kind of oil and water in a lot of ways. It's kind of like Nick's relationship with Lane Kiffin, but Jimbo served a purpose for Nick in terms of his offensive brilliance and his ability to game plan. But I just think the demise of the A&M program under Jimbo, as you guys well know, that was kind of ground zero for the NIL market. Mm-hmm. You know, $30 million or whatever it was, $20 million that was put into that first recruiting class in A&M, and it just completely changed the culture in the locker room, which is another problem that these coaches are facing. So, but I got to mention one thing because it's in your backyard, and this was John's reporting. Uh-huh. Those Maryland chapters, when you get a chance to read those, they're called Macy's. Macy's 1 and Macy's 2, and Mike Loxley is the star of both of those, and he was so honest and out front with John. And the reason they're called Macy's is because that's where Maryland sits right now. If you look about mm-hmm. department stores and you think about Saks Fifth Avenue, and that's Alabama, that's Michigan, that's Ohio State, pick mm-hmm. another – five or six schools, Oregon, and Target is below you, right? They're the discount. So that's maybe UNC Charlotte, or you could be even San Diego State or a school like that. But when you're in the middle, that's the last place you want to be in college football right now, because Maryland doesn't have the NIL
right.
Component as other schools do, that 10 to 15 million in the Big Ten, even more Ohio State at 20 million. So I mean, it's funny
you say that.
Virginia Tech's in the same boat. They're a Macy's as well.
I was talking to a guy that's in charge of the football NIL last year for Maryland, and I believe the number was $2 million total.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
$2 million total.
And Ohio State spent, what did Ohio State spend this year, like $25
million? They spent $20
million. Yeah, $20 million.
So try and compete with that.
Can't.
And, you know, and if that's the thing, and Loxley's so good, and he's so honest about the predicament. And there's actually a story in there, and John reports this out, where Talia Tungavailoa and a couple other players came to Loxley before they played in mm-hmm. in the bowl game, and this was through Talia's dad, really, but wanted $50,000 for them to play in a bowl game.
Wow.
$50,000. Now, there's a word for that, you know, and it borders on extortion.
Yeah.
But right. Mike had to find that money through his donor network in order to have his star quarterback and a couple other really good players.
That's wild.
Performing a bowl game, because that bowl game meant a lot to Maryland
right.
in the overall picture. So that's where we're at.
I mean, yeah, it's crazy. We could talk to you forever,
yeah,
Armin.
Armin, thank you for the time. We really do appreciate
it.
Armin Katayan, co-author of the new book, and we're going to get it correct this time. The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. I think we're all looking forward to reading it. Thanks again for the time.
Thank you, Armin. He could talk. Yeah, I could talk to him for hours.
There's probably so many juicy details in that book. So, yeah, definitely go out and grab that book. It should be a great read. When we come back, we'll get into EB's entertainment page on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.